Do you manage your own IT for distributed teams in Asia? And you know how painful it is. Essavel helps your in-house team by taking cumbersome tasks off their hands and giving them the tools to manage IT effectively. Get help across 8 countries in Asia Pacific, from on and offboarding, procuring devices, to real-time IT support and device management. With our state-of-the-art platform, gain full control of all your IT infrastructure in one place. Our team of IT support pros are keen to help you grow. So check out esevel.com and get a demo today. Use our referral code ASIA for 3 months free. Terms and conditions apply.
Underserved when it comes to computing capabilities, and there's a huge potential for those countries if we could get them to compute. And that's exactly what we intend to do. But those are the extreme regions. Even in places like the US, you know, which are well served by the hyperscalers, there's certainly like the middle of the US, which is ignored. Southeast Asia, if you're in Singapore or Jakarta, you know, you're served by everybody. But yeah, if you're in Vietnam, how are you served? If you're in Thailand, how are you served? The internet is inherently unfair. We want to make it more fair for our customers and our customers' customers.
Welcome to Analyze Asia, the premier podcast dedicated to dissecting the pulse of business, technology, and media in Asia. I'm Bernard Leung, and AI is in the mind of every enterprise out there. How are different industries able to tap into AI, specifically at the edge, where network connectivity and communication are extremely important? With me today, Jay Jenkins, CTO for Cloud Computing in Akamai, here to help us understand how AI can be deployed at the edge. Jay, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks, Bernard. I'm super happy to be here.
Yes. And I think this is your first time on the show, and we are always interested in origin stories. So how did you start your career?
Yeah, how did I start my career? Well, you know, I started out as an engineer, so doing engineering work, you know, and this was the very early days of the internet. And I was working at a software company building dial-up software. And, you know, I was helping sort of, you know, test and support that and helping to engineer that. And through that, you know, I joined a couple of other software companies before getting into IT consulting. So I worked for KPMG for a number of years. And then there was a spinoff from KPMG called Bearing Point. I worked with them in Australia. So I was originally from the US and then moved to Australia. I then joined a very small consulting company, and we were working on business process management software for large banks in Australia. And we got acquired, which is great. But, you know, they asked me, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, why don't I go start a branch office in Singapore? And they said, no. And I ended up running their offshore development center in Vietnam for a couple of years before then finally getting a big project in Singapore. So then I worked in Singapore on that project for 1 year, left, and I joined Google. So it was the early days of Google Cloud. So I was with Google for 9 years. I saw that recently you had Cesar Sengupta on the show. I worked with Cesar as well. And then after that 9 years as the tech strategist and evangelist for Google Cloud, I had an opportunity to go work at ByteDance in Singapore. So I worked with ByteDance for 8 months, helping them get their products ready for enterprises. And then I had this amazing opportunity at Akamai to come and lead their new cloud computing division and messaging for their field CTO role for customers. And it was a great opportunity. Distributed computing is something I'd always been interested in. And with Akamai's large global footprint and computing footprint, you know, I felt that it was a really great match for me.
So before we get into that subject, I wanted to ask, what interesting lessons can you share with my audience on your career journey?
Yeah. So, you know, I think for me, number one is, you know, take a bet on, you know, something that you're interested in, like go and research it and learn about it. And I think, you know, and if you feel like you can add value to that space, you know, find opportunity that's going to let you, you know, move in there. When it, like, you know, I think with the early days of cloud computing, I pretty much said to myself, I'm going to go find a role doing cloud computing because I believe that, you know, that there is a huge opportunity for growth there. And that's essentially what I did. So find those opportunities. The second one is seek out different perspectives. Diversity of opinion and diversity of thought are extremely important. And it's very easy, especially if you're working in a single domain, to sort of get trapped and only have an understanding of that single domain. But by diversifying your thought, talking to people from different backgrounds, talking to people who have different opinions and are working in different industries is going to add to your role. It's going to add to your value. And many of the stories that they're going to tell you are going to be value for you and your role in your career. And, you know, I guess the last one that I would, you know, advise you to do is, and perhaps this is sort of related to the first one, is, you know, don't stop learning. Go out and try to learn about new things early. Download new types of software. Play with, you know, new types of gadgets, especially if you're in the technology space, because the field is moving at an extremely rapid pace, you know, and it's not going to slow down. It's only going to move faster. So get out there and just, you know, start playing with technology. And I guess that's the important term here is, you know, play with it. You know, don't take it too seriously. And as you play with it, you know, you're going to find something you're interested in.
Agree 100% on that. So that comes to the main subject of the day, which I want to talk about is Akamai in the age of edge AI. I think let's begin with the market opportunity. Can you explain your definition of AI at the edge, the total market opportunity, and what value proposition for enterprises, and specifically why Akamai is poised to capture this market?
Absolutely. So, you know, for us, AI at the edge is about what the Linux Foundation would refer to as access edge, which is the edge at the telco. Now, there are other edges as well, right? Edges on-premise, even your device, right, is considered an edge endpoint. But where we're really focused is on access edge. And that is simply because over the past 25 years, that's what Akamai has been building. You know, we've been building a global network and we have over 4,100 points of presence. And it would be a shame, you know, not sort of let our customers take advantage of our global footprint in order to push AI out to the edge. So what does that mean for us? What does that look like? So essentially what we're offering is sort of, you know, single digit millisecond latency endpoints for people to run AI. And they don't necessarily have to sort of overload devices. They can actually offload devices and push that back onto the cloud or move some of these workloads from these core computing regions to the edge to run more efficiently with lower latency. So if you're struggling over sort of 10 to 20 milliseconds in your model, you can gain 40 to 100 milliseconds simply by moving that to the edge. You know, and that's extremely important and extremely valuable. The other part of that is privacy and in particular regulatory compliance. So if you have to keep a customer's data in country, well, if your AI models are sitting in, you know, a regional data center, you have to move that customer's data into the region in order to run that inference model. But if it's at the edge, you can actually keep it, you know, even down to a metro location. So just do the AI inference in that metro location, delete the data, you've delivered value to your customer without compromising their data. And the last thing about AI at the edge is the opportunity for ingress of data, right? The ability to understand what data is coming in, clean up that data, or possibly do new sorts of techniques such as federated training. So essentially you can train at the edge and then federate the model rather than moving the data and aggregating the data. So that is what, you know, we really define as AI at the edge.
So probably very important. I do know the company Akamai. So can you introduce the company Akamai, its global vision and mission, and its current footprint in the Asia Pacific region?
Yeah, absolutely. So 25 years ago, Akamai invented the CDN. Actually, I should say Professor Tom Layton and his student Danny Lewin invented the content delivery network. So, you know, if you've been around that long, you'll remember the days where WWW not only stood for World Wide Web, but for, in many people's minds, stood for the worldwide weight, you know, in particular for content. And so creating these content delivery networks, you know, really changed how the internet worked. And, you know, as the internet became more dynamic, as things changed, the abilities of Akamai and what we were doing for customers also needed to change. And it started out with simple things like DDoS protection and web application firewalls. But then moved in towards that security direction. Because one thing we found is it's great to get content closer to customers, but it's also to keep threats further away. So really, you know, that's what we were using our edge for. So we integrated a lot of security products into that. And now security products are a huge part of Akamai's business. And a couple of years ago, so 2 years ago, Akamai acquired Linode. So Linode was considered an alternative cloud company based out of Philadelphia. In the US, And we acquired Linode in order to begin to scale up our cloud capabilities. So Linode has, you know, great customer support. It has fantastic support from developers globally. And it's a very simple and easy to use type of cloud product. And we really wanted to bring that to our customers and start to bring some of that capability to the edge. In APJ specifically, you know, we've been here for 20 years. So 20 of those 25 years. So for a long time. I'm personally based out of Singapore, and I'm happy to be here in the region and have that close communication with our customers. And the reason why they wanted this role in particular in Singapore is because APJ is our fastest growing business. We have 3,200 employees in 14 offices in 9 countries, and it's a significant part of our business. 2,100 customers on 300 partners in APJ under our Akamai partner program.
So as the CTO for cloud computing in Akamai, what's your role and coverage then?
Yeah, so my coverage is global. So, you know, I have a team based in the US and EMEA helping me cover those. Today, I'm actually in Paris. So I'm actually, you know, recording this from Paris. But my role is essentially to help our customers sort of understand, you know, what the technology can do for them and to help them plan out their roadmaps, to help them think about their architectures differently in order to, you know, maximize their potential for whatever their business is. So it's my and my team's job to understand industries, understand where technologies are heading, to have an opinion about, you know, what we feel is going to be a good investment for our customers. And sometimes it's, well, you should do this today. And sometimes it's, you know, well, you shouldn't do this today. But these are the things that you need to do in order to get ready for that future.
So as the Chief Technology Officer, what are your long-term visions for Akamai's role? I think the landscape of cloud computing and edge networks are also evolving at this point in time.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think Akamai has a very interesting perspective. You know, I talked earlier about sort of having different perspectives. Akamai has a very different perspective. A lot of the hyperscaler clouds start with the data center. You know, the data center is sort of the key to everything that they do, and everything then moves out from there. And Akamai, we're starting at the edge and we're sort of looking inwards. You know, we've always been thinking about, you know, how to get close to the customer and how to accelerate applications and make things faster. We've, you know, created a global network. And now we are sort of looking at things from the edge end. And, you know, we talked to quite a few of our customers about this, you know, before we acquired Linode, before we started down this path of edge computing, because we wanted to check with them, you know, is this something that's important for them? And for many of them, it absolutely was. And so we're going to take the knowledge that we've built up over the past 25 years, and we're going to apply that to compute. We've been managing our own compute at the edge, and now we're going to sort of open up that magic for our customers to deliver that. So what is our future vision? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we're going to have virtual machines at the edge. So we've had functions as a service at the edge for a long time, and our customers have been extremely happy with that. But there are some customers where functions as a service simply does not provide enough functionality. It does not have enough compute, doesn't have enough memory. Mm. You can't really do persistent types of work with functions as a service. So, you know, and then we thought about different models that we might take to the edge. And we thought sort of, you know, the more we thought about it, the more we thought, well, why don't we just provide some primitives at the edge so that they can run whatever they want. If they want to run a Redis cluster or caching service, they can. If they want to build their own CDN, you know, they can. Mm. And they can use this edge compute capability. But we also understand, you know, that people do want managed services. And so for the first step for us at the edge is going to be offering containers as a service at the edge. So for those organizations who are already building cloud native applications, it'll make it very easy for them to, you know, to push those containers out to the edge. And then finally, looking at automation. One of the difficult things that, you know, we're seeing around distributed computing in particular is, you know, it's up to the platform engineering team or the developers to tell the application where to run. And, you know, that's great. But, you know, what if they didn't have to? You know, what if we could dynamically move these applications out to the edge? You know, I was just recently talking to a partner who's, you know, going to, you know, use us to push out to the edge, but then also push workloads like using WebAssembly out to devices from our edge. So looking at these new sort of techniques and paradigms, in order to support that, we need to have automation available for our customers so that as customers wake up in Ho Chi Minh City, that, you know, we'll start to run the services in Ho Chi Minh City. And as they go to sleep, we can scale those services down to zero if needed. And we want to make sure that we can do this globally. And we want to make sure that customers can do this based on a variety of factors. So maybe it's latency, maybe it's cost, maybe it's, you know, they want to run in the region with the lowest emissions because they want to hit a sustainability target. Maybe it's regulatory and compliance reasons. Whatever the reason, we want to make sure that we can automate that for our customers. And so that's really the broader vision, is making sure that we have this dynamic continuum of compute that can run the workload wherever it needs to be run based on the factors of determined by the customer and their platform engineering teams.
So I think there is this concept of generalized edge compute, which I think is termed Gecko for you. Can you elaborate the core concept of Gecko and I guess how it differentiates Akamai's cloud computing approach from, say, the traditional models, since I used to work for a hyperscaler as such, like you do?
So look, generalized edge compute, which is affectionately known as Gecko internally, is essentially what I was describing before. So rather than having only functions of service, rather than only having narrow use cases at the edge, we want to make sure it's more general. So generalized edge compute. So we're going to have virtual machines with local storage available just as you would a virtual machine in a core data center. And this year, you know, so already this year, we've rolled out 10 of these regions. So two in APJ and in Kuala Lumpur and Hong Kong, but 75 of these locations by the end of the year, along with our core computing regions, will give us 100 locations where customers can run these workloads. And we're not going to stop there. So we're going to have hundreds of these regions over the next few years. And we're going to focus on those locations where hyperscalers don't have compute. Africa and South America, as an example, have been extremely underserved when it comes to computing capabilities. And there's a huge potential for those countries if we could get them to compute. And that's exactly what we intend to do. But those are the extreme regions. Even in places like the US, you know, which are well served by the hyperscalers, there's certainly like the middle of the US, which is ignored. Southeast Asia, if you're in Singapore or Jakarta, you know, you're served by everybody. But yeah, if you're in Vietnam, how are you served? If you're in Thailand, how are you served? The internet is inherently unfair. We want to make it more fair for our customers and our customers' customers.
One interesting thing is, what inspired the shift towards, say, embedding cloud computing capabilities into Akamai's edge network?
Yeah, so this is actually something that's changed even. So I've been with Akamai for 1 year, just a few weeks ago. And this is something that's even changed, you know, in that past year in terms of how we've been focusing our compute. So initially, we were going to have these core computing regions, and we were actually going to set up what we call distributed computing regions. We were going to essentially, these were going to sort of be smaller data centers that we were setting up. But, you know, a few members of the team said, well, you know, we already have these compute capabilities at the edge. Is it possible for us to, you know, simply use that? And internally, we did, you know, some work, some experimentation on what that would look like. And we can. And we had some, you know, it's still currently limited access, but we had some early customers sort of testing and playing with that as well, to see how it might accelerate user experience in these particular cases. So it was valuable. We figured out that we could do it. Over the past year, we've done a lot of work in automation of our data centers, and now we're extending that same automation into these edges, which is allowing us, you know, to deploy to these 75 different locations this year. And we're going to learn a lot. We're going to continue to learn a lot in order to accelerate that and build different types of experiences for our customers, and listening to them in terms of what sort of workloads they're choosing to run at the edge and making sure that they're tuned for the performance of those workloads.
Mm. Just how does the Gecko actually enhance, say, the user experience, say, in terms of performance and latency? I think just to help my audience visualize a bit, I think when you have in Southeast Asia, there are definitely industries that may be off, very, very far off, away from the city center where they need access compute. And that's where most of the edge is. When I was working with Airbus, or when we do drone and satellite service, one of the biggest pain points actually trying to get a network that's able to allow us to monitor communication and navigation of the drone itself. And that is definitely requiring latency of what you are providing. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's this saying in the, like, the networking world, which is like round trip time is bandwidth.
Yes.
So the whole idea of, you know, pushing something out to the edge, and, you know, earlier I referred to like 40 to 100 milliseconds, and that doesn't seem like a lot of time. And in fact, you know, it's not a lot of time, but that communication happens more than one time. You know, it's a series of back and forths between, you know, a client and a server, and that adds up. So if you can reduce that, you know, by 10x, you know, go from 100 milliseconds down to single digits, that's it. That can have, you know, a dramatic effect on the performance of your application and to a user experience. And maybe to give you some indication of sort of how fast that is. So if you're, you know, if you've been sort of watching sort of like the Apple Vision Pro, they, you know, they talk about how it only takes 12 milliseconds for it to process the external imaging and turn that into a three-dimensional image inside of your headset for their pass-through. And 12 milliseconds is very fast. You know, you don't get motion sick. But if we are delivering from the edge, we can also do single-digit milliseconds. So if you're building virtual reality experiences, all of a sudden you don't have to build them inside of a headset. You can actually build them at the edge and deliver them over a network, you know, assuming that you have the bandwidth capability to do that. But you certainly have the capability in terms of latency. So it provides these sort of new and different types of experiences. Another, you know, and most of these use cases are in sort of highly interactive types of designs. So gaming, as an example, media and entertainment, as another example, social media. So we've been working with a large global social media customer, and, you know, they're using our edge to have user-generated content be dynamically transcoded, rate throttled, and then delivered back to local users. So if you're doing a live stream, as an example, you know, the processing takes time, but the latency is there to essentially give you real-time capabilities for live streaming rather than having, you know, the 30-second or 60-second lag, which a lot of customers have become used to. Now you have more immediate capabilities. So, you know, if you're sending little heart on a stream, that that streamer will get that heart immediately.
Can you also share, like, the kind of challenges when you try to integrate, say, like, very cloud-native type of computing into this kind of massive edge network? I think it's not an easy feat, but I will definitely give credit to Akamai in able to make it happen on that.
Yeah. So, you know, actually, cloud native is a huge enabler for what I see as the, you know, the future of edge native. And cloud native has actually been quite constrained by current cloud architecture. And what I mean by that is essentially, you know, you create a bunch of microservices, but you also tend to run them inside of the same data center. And for a number of reasons, you know, yes, for latency, but also because the certain things get more complex as you add additional data centers, right? You have to think about your networking. You have to think about egress costs, you know, across each of those as well. But there's a lot of value from running across multiple clouds and across multiple data centers. Resiliency, risk, you know, concentration risk. Perhaps you want to use services from one cloud provider within your application that you're running in another cloud provider. You know, there's all sorts of capabilities to integrate those, and you could. But again, the functional overhead in order to manage that is difficult. The security overhead to manage that's difficult. And the financial costs are difficult to measure. And you're kind of trapped inside of a single ecosystem. Now, what cloud native gives us is the capability to take some of those microservices and move some of those microservices to another cloud provider or out to an edge, such as Akamai's edge. That said, you know, you do have to be aware of those other costs. And while we have seen some movement from the hyperscalers in decreasing the egress costs, it's normally only if you want to exit them entirely, right? It's not if you want to have a multi-cloud implementation. But one of the things we've done at Akamai is we actually have extremely low egress rates. So it's 0.5 cents per gigabyte, which is, you know, 1/10 of any hyperscaler. because we really believe in this multi-cloud world, and we want to make sure these workloads can move around, and we don't want cost to necessarily be a constraint for innovation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's where we're at today, but I also very strongly believe, you know, that that's going to change. And it's going to change because, you know, customers are going to be pressuring these hyperscalers to be able to use, you know, the services that they want to use, no matter what provider they're running on.
Mm-hmm. So one interesting thing is, I think you have already have some early trials with Gecko's enterprise customers. Can you talk about them and what is the feedback like?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the feedback has been really good. So, you know, I look, it's safe to say that, you know, the early interest would be from customers such as gaming accelerators and gaming companies, where latency is extremely important because, you know, there is no group, I would say, more passionate than gamers. In terms of, you know, making sure they have low latency applications. And the response has been very good. You know, so being able to do things like matchmaking and game serving at the edge in a metro location is kind of game changing for gaming companies. But, you know, I think some of the more interesting ones are, you know, use cases that we hadn't considered were going to be sort of the first out of the gate. So we've been working with a large retailing company in Japan, you know, and they sell globally. And we have been testing a couple of different things with them around their e-commerce site. So, you know, they have a lot of customers, you know, in Southeast Asia, but most of those workloads are running out of Singapore. And the experience, you know, isn't the best in different locations. Now, luckily, they already have a very strong microservices architecture, and they're using two patterns, which are very common. So one's called backend for frontend, and one is called server-side rendering. And what these do is they just make it easier for a page to be drawn for, you know, for a customer who's browsing a website. It helps to write that page faster. But those tend to be served still centrally. And so there's still a bit of lag in serving those elements. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing for them is we're helping them do some early testing on what would it be like if we actually were running the backend for frontend services, which essentially do API aggregation and caching. And server-side rendering at the edge. And it turns out, you know, this has a huge potential to increase the speed of the page being drawn, which increases the conversion rate for, you know, for their shopping cart. So, you know, it's extremely compelling and very interesting ways. You know, for them, you know, they have close to like an 80% cache hit ratio on their cache. So it's, you know, so for 80% of the time, the customers are getting extremely low latency page drawings. Which is great.
Mm. So what are the potential future use case for Gecko other than just immersive retail? Maybe there are other applications that you foresee may pop up?
Yeah, look, you know, we're really excited. You know, I mentioned some of the AI ones earlier, but then, you know, even on the security side, it's really interesting. Like, what if we could do encryption and decryption at the edge? Then yeah. All of a sudden, you know, the storage of that data is, you know, a bit more safe, and we can still have, you know, the safety of storing that data offshore without the risk of having that data leak. So if we could, you know, decrypt and encrypt at the edge and keep the keys at the edge, you know, that's a really interesting space. Fintech, you know, there's obviously a lot of interest from fintech, not just around sort of, you know, what you might think of when I think about distributed apps and, you know, crypto, but even around things like currency exchange. Having that at the edge and having that as fast as possible to make sure that you get the rate that you expected to get when you're making that exchange. Even things like that, you know, which can change by the millisecond, are extremely important in that space. The other industries are industries such as IoT. So while humans have a certain expectation for latency, I would say devices have even more of an expectation for low latency. And for a lot of today's models, you know, they have to have these devices on premise because they need very low latency. And we, what we're doing with Akamai Edge is going to allow them to offload that back onto the edge in order to do that work and still have very low latency communication between devices. And I'm talking about going beyond things like manufacturing and supply chain. You can, you know, we're in talks with a company that does a lot of work around autonomous vehicles and autonomous devices. And that's also a great use case for different levels of compute. So for something like an autonomous vehicle, of course, you're going to need compute in the vehicle, right? Because the communication is not guaranteed at all times. But there's great value in having sort of metro level aggregation of data and understanding what the movements are within a metro area. So if you look at the different points of aggregation, the different decisions you can make at each one of those points, it becomes very valuable to have the compute close to where the data is being gathered and the decision needs to be made.
Hmm. So my favorite question, what's the one thing you know about Gecko in generalized edge computing that very few do?
You know, I would honestly say, I'll answer this honestly first, and then I'll talk about me. I honestly have learned more from the customers that I've talked to than, you know, have come out of my own head. And maybe this goes earlier in sort of like seeking different perspectives and people from different industries, is it's hard to imagine how this is really going to change computing overall. And like when I think about this space, like I do think about it sort of really far in the future from a personal perspective and from a personal window. But, you know, getting those different perspectives allows me to, number one, sort of understand what it is they're trying to achieve, but also even to add to my own expectations. So that said, like, where am I at now? You know, what are, you know, the things that I know or believe, I should say. And, you know, I believe that distributed computing is, you know, certainly going to go beyond what we're doing today, even with Access Edge. Distributed computing is going to be about the ability to have almost your own personal computing cloud that's going to travel with you. It's going to have your data. It's going to have the services that you need, and it is going to rotate around you based on the compute in the area, perhaps based on your phone or your watch or whatever communication devices look like in the future. You know, you're going to have this cloud that travels with you. You're going to have control over that cloud, the ingress and egress of data. You're going to have control over how that data gets used, whether that data gets used to target advertising to you as you walk around or not. And organizations are going to have to think about how they pay you for that data. Now, sometimes that data is paid for through, like it is today, through, you know, free software. But in the future, you know, that might actually be, you know, even more transactional. Perhaps it's data for data. Perhaps it's data for future data, future value. Again, who knows what the currency system is going to look like at that time. But, you know, for me, you know, the edge is really just the beginning. It's the first step. And if we don't start to experiment with that today, if we don't start to play with that, you know, I guess to go back to what we're saying earlier or what I was saying earlier. If we don't start to play with that, you know, we're never going to understand what the full potential is going to be.
I think I want to focus now the conversation into AI, because given that AI is now proliferating across different industries, and I think that one of the things that people think about AI is they don't think about at the edge is really quite important for a lot of AI applications to work, specifically in vision learning. There's the zero shot and one shot learning in image recognition. How does the Akamai's Gecko platform sort of leverage its edge AI capabilities to enhance its services? I think specifically the two biggest is the AI inference piece and also the data analytics where, as you said, right, sometimes the data need not go back all the way. It has to be stored within that space in order to allow it to perform its function and also learning on the fly to adapt to the situations at that position.
Yeah, you know, I think about it like a sort of like a human nervous system, right? So, you know, you have your brain, which might be like a core computing region, and you have your edge, right? Like your fingers. And like if you touch something hot, the message does not have to go back to your brain in order for your hand to react. And, you know, the speed of light right between your brain and your hand is pretty fast, but your body wants to be able to react even faster. Now, the globe is, you know, much, much bigger, and it takes the speed of light a little bit longer, you know, a couple hundred milliseconds to, you know, to get from place to place. So it's even more important for edge computing to have the capability to react. Now, AI is all about inference. It's all about, you know, decision making. And there are two things, right, you need to think about, which is where is the data being gathered and where the decision has to be made. Now, sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes the decision is made centrally, and that's okay. And you don't have, you know, that the immediacy of that decision is not that important. But for other things, the immediacy of the decision is important. So you want to, where you gather the data, be able to react to that data extremely rapidly. And, you know, I could point to Akamai's own products to, you know, to sort of signify this. Our security products, you know, we need to be able to react at the edge. You know, one of the things I said earlier is, you know, we want to keep threats further away. Well, in order to keep threats further away, we have to trap it exactly at the surface where it's being detected. And in order to do that, we need to be able to apply the AI within that space. Now, I also mentioned things like, you know, autonomous devices, autonomous vehicles. Those things also have to have low latency AI inference in order to do their work. Now, AI inference in particular gets somewhat complicated because sometimes AI inference requires specialized processing. So, you know, as, and this is also why future automation is going to be important, because we need to be able to understand, you know, what the latency is between moving the data to a specialized processor versus just processing it with whatever we have on hand. Now, where we are today is, you know, a lot of, in fact, I'm happy to say most AI inference can just be done with CPUs. You know, GPUs for training inference, most of it can be done with CPUs efficiently. But, you know, as these models get bigger, you know, specialized processors, and whether those are GPUs or some specialized chips, it doesn't matter. But it has to be there, you know, for that inferencing. Mm. That said, you know, there are two, she has a sort of like this sort of race. You'll see like the models being built that require GPUs for inference, but then some will come along and they'll figure out a way to do that efficiently. And I think that's going to continue to happen, you know, for a while, but I do think you'll definitely get to a point where you need specialized processing. So you do need automation to figure out sort of like where's the most efficient place to do that, like where the CPU is, or does it require a GPU? Looking further in the future, you know, can I do this on the phone, or do I need to offload this onto an access edge? So, you know, for us and how we think about AI and inferencing, you know, we're really thinking about and focusing on the operationalization of AI, including the testing, deployment, and then the inferencing of the AI at the edge. I know there's a lot of focus on GPUs and there's a lot of focus on training. But once that value is created, that, you know, that value will be delivered at the edge.
Mm. Which is where the inference engine really sits at the moment, right? So I guess for generative AI technology specifically, because of the large language models, how do they benefit from, say, Akamai's distributed cloud and edge computing infrastructure that is now provided by Gecko?
Yeah, so, you know, we're working with a partner called Neural Magic out of Boston, and they do CPU acceleration of models. And one of the things they do is CPU acceleration of large language models. Oh. So, you know, for us, you know, number one is like, how can we get this to customers, as close to customers as possible? And right now, today, at the edge, that's CPUs. The second thing is taking a look at different models. So for large language models, as an example, large language models are very rarely today delivered raw from inference. You know, there's a lot of work that's done after inference, post-inference, in order to make sure that it's delivering you a right answer. So as we all know by now, you know, large language models are very prone to hallucination. And, you know, so there are these models, these RAG models that are available that can actually perform checks on that hallucination. And those can be done, you know, closer to the edge and closer to where the users are. The other thing is, you know, you have a lot of large language models that are multimodal. In other words, you know, they don't send the inference to a single model. They try to figure out where it needs to send it based on the model that's going to provide the best response for the question that you're asking. You know, if you want the weather today, you know, you don't necessarily want a large language model to try to do text prediction on what the weather might be. You want to actually find out what the facts are about the weather today. So that's also an area for edge, because we can actually figure that out at the edge and send those messages to the models wherever they might be in the globe. They're going to provide the best answer. And then finally, you know, the interface that's being used to deliver those models, making sure that, you know, we have those capabilities at the edge for the customers to deliver that user experience.
So how would you think about the role of edge computing in then real-time AI processes, and how would Gecko would be optimized for such stuff? I think the problem with AI, real-time AI, is really like you're trying to get close. I think the autonomous driving example that you give is pretty succinct in terms of how this really affects, because it's still, you're driving and it's a life and death situation, and you need to make sure the AI is in real time is actually able to manage those needs.
Yeah. So honestly, let me sort of like separate generative AI from large language models.
That's right.
So right. So large language models tend to be sort of chat-based today. Who knows what it's going to look like in the future, but it tends to be chat-based today. And as human beings, we're very tolerant of low latency, right? So, you know, like some of the more recent demos, they'll even have like the model like add like an while it's thinking, which is brilliant, right? You just put a little in there. Oh, and they're thinking, great. You know, we're very tolerant for that. But for other types of generative AI, so, you know, right now, image generation and video generation are very slow. And because they're slow, again, right now, we're kind of used to it. But as, you know, this technology matures, you know, imagine being able to have sort of more real-time image generation. Imagine, you know, maybe a good example is something like retail. Like, I want to try on an outfit. So great, here's the outfit, here's me, bang. All of a sudden, it's just me in that outfit. Imagine being able to have, you know, real-time AI video, you know, and it's there in some sense, but imagine having sort of more dynamic backgrounds. So as a user-generated, you know, if I'm creating user-generated content, I give them a capability to actually stream and add AI capabilities as they're streaming. So, you know, I think that what we need to think about is, you know, not necessarily how generative AI is being used today, but sort of how it might be used in the future as it becomes more integrated. And, you know, the more real time it is, the more valuable it's going to become.
So my traditional closing question then, what does great look like for Akamai in your domain expertise for the next few years?
Yeah. So for the next few years, look, you know, it's all about, you know, rolling this out to, you know, hundreds of these edge locations and enabling as many customers as we can. At the same time, you know, our pace of learning is going to be astronomical. You know, hopefully we'll figure out, you know, a few things that we're doing wrong. So, you know, we'll listen to our customers, we'll pivot rapidly in order to help them achieve their goals. Already, you know, our internal roadmap is changing based on the customer that we're talking to, and that's great. And for me, you know, success is really about merging our roadmap with our customers' roadmaps and being able to provide that sort of future vision, but listening to their perspectives and their feedback and being able to pivot. So practically today, in terms of how that looks at our roadmap, we are going to have VMs first, then containers, look at how they're using those containers, start monitoring that, start offering recommendations first on where they should be moving those workloads, and then validate those recommendations, and then look at automation so we can actually automate those workloads. And that will happen over the next few years. One of the things that we're doing in order to help enable that is, you know, we've just increased our CNCF membership to gold. CNCF is going to be extremely important for us to help with a lot of that automation and fleet management. Because as we look at it, you know, this isn't necessarily a, you know, all future workloads move to Akamai's edge. You know, this is a multi-cloud world, and it's a multi-service world, and it's going to continue to be. And, you know, I think once we realize that, you know, we're going to be able to get more value over the out of the different types of services, you know, that all of these clouds are offering and then all of their partners are offering as well.
Jay, many thanks for coming on the show. In closing, I have two quick questions. Any recommendations that have inspired you?
So, you know, I was just thinking about this today, actually. There's a book that I read actually, you know, a while ago, but it always keeps coming back, in particular when I talk about AI. And it's called 1,000 Brains by Jeff Hawkins. And he uses, you know, biology for a lot of his inspiration around how he thinks about AI. And I've always been kind of cautious about that because, you know, biology can also kind of be a limitation. You know, it's okay to use it for inspiration, but if we sort of try to duplicate it, you know, I don't think that that's going to be successful. But, you know, if you read 1,000 Brains, you know, I think that you'll have a different perspective on how AI works and how the human brain works. The human brain is also just a big prediction engine. So it's very cool. And it's a great book comparing sort of, you know, where we're at with AI to sort of how the human brain works and how far we actually have to go for AI. I know it feels like that artificial general intelligence is here, but it's not here yet. We still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I always just tell my friends, I know it when I see it. So where can my audience find you?
Yeah, so look, definitely ping me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to have a chat, and all, especially if you want to have a chat of technology. I'm based in Singapore. I'm even happy to catch up with a coffee and talk about tech. I am on X. I almost said Twitter. I am on X at JAYD Jenkins. Okay. So you can find me there as well.
Okay, you can definitely find this podcast on YouTube and many of our podcast channels out there. And of course, subscribe to our newsletter. So Jay, many thanks for coming on the show, and I look forward to speak to you soon.
Great, thanks, Parag.